Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 173 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. Announcements this week. What do we have?
Well, one thing that we have, an announcement that's related to us, is we finally got up our Patreon page, and that is at patreon.com/outlanderpod. And Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
And what is Patreon?
What this is a way for you and us to financially support creators, whether it's a creator of a podcast, such as we are, or a creator of a piece of art or music or whatever it is. There are all kinds of artists up there, but they're called creators because there's all different types of creations. And what this enables you to do is, if you like what we do and you like the show we put out, this enables you to subscribe in a way to offer support at the levels that we have set up are, I believe, $1 a month, $5 a month, and $20 a month. And a few $2 have come through, $2 a month. So I'm thinking you can even set your own.
You can.
And what supporting us allows us to do is to cover some of the costs of our show, whether it's web hosting for the website, equipment, upgrades, just images, transcriptions, anything that we are already doing. At the most basic level, it allows us to continue doing the things we're doing and kind of cover the costs of just the kind of bare bones production of the show that we bring you. At slightly higher levels, or at the next level, and I don't mean funding level, I mean at the next level of things we can do, or how we can benefit from something like Patreon, is not only getting our basic costs covered so we can continue to do the show, it allows us to put our time and effort and other funds into doing something a little extra. We have never offered a transcription because they are very time consuming, obviously, and to get a good one, it's quite expensive. Now, this is not something we're looking to be able to bring anytime soon, or at least with any regularity. But, you know, pie in the sky one day, in a perfect world, all of our episodes would be transcribed. And so that's something that's a possibility out there, or at the very least, some interviews. So maybe one every once in a while. And of course, I mentioned gear, maybe some, we travel to fan events. You know, this might enable us to bring some more little tchotchkes, or, you know, do some live events somewhere and help with the production costs of some of those. So it's to enable us to continue doing what we're doing, but also to see what else and to build on that and build on what else we might be able to bring you or enhance what we're already doing. And on the other side, what would a subscriber or a patron benefit from supporting us? Well, there are little things. At the very basic, at least the ones that we've set, the basic level or the lowest level is $1 a month, which is still pretty freaking awesome.
For $1 on top of our eternal gratitude and thanks, there will be access to our Patreon exclusive feed, podcasts, videos, and other goodies, access to any live recordings of our show that we do, and an extra entry in all of our upcoming giveaways.
That's right. So the kind of new and shiny thing, or the thing that sticks out to me of those, is the extra entry in a giveaway. You never know. It might be that one that gets you whatever the giveaway is. And we haven't done a giveaway yet since we started Patreon, but we have our giveaway that is going to celebrate our 1 million downloads. It's been busy around here trying to get up. We've gotten up a lot of shows, done a few interviews, and trying to balance work life and also get these done. So it's still coming. And we'll definitely try to get it done before the end of the year, but it's just know it's still coming. So yeah, we've already posted like a few little outtakes, I think two or three. Just little outtakes, like things that happen during a show, or things that, I guess, bloopers, if you will, that I'm like, I'm not going to leave that in there. That's too embarrassing, or whatever. So we've already posted a few of those, and only our patrons will even see those. So, and that doesn't matter what level that anyone supports us at. Anyone who supports us in any way there or at any amount will have access to those. And that's all there is right now. Again, this just started a few days ago. We're going to at some point do some videos, some live videos of our recording. We're still working that, the kinks out of that. So basically anything we put on that feed, you'll have access to. And the next level is $5 a month. And Summer, read what that is.
So this one is by pledging $5 per month, you will receive all of the above things listed in the $1 pledge. And you will receive our annual Beltane card, which we are going to be beginning in, what is that, April? Is that April?
May 1st.
May. May Day. I'm so bad at that. Okay, so we're going to start doing an annual Beltane card. So we'll be mailing those out in the mail to our Beltane card members at the $5 level. They'll also get one of our Outlander wristbands, which is a one-time thank you. So that would be mailed out upon joining. And then, of course, like I said, you receive everything from the previous category.
And then we have our $20 level of support. And that has everything that the $1 and $5 support level of support has plus.
And plus, that we're calling this our standing circle of supporters. With this level, you'll be listed on our, we're going to have a support page that lists all of our standing circle supporters. And the opportunity to join us on an episode for one of our read-alongs.
Of course, that's not going backwards. Outlander and DIA, and most likely most of Voyager, are or part of Voyager at least, have already been done, and it's not retroactive. I just say it's not going back. But going forward, as long as we get however many books we get, there's plenty of chapters.
Right, and we will be doing all of the books, regardless of the state of the TV show. We are in it for all the books.
We already know something else we're going to add to the $1 level, which, of course, affects everyone, anyone who supports us through Patreon. And this will be updated probably just after the first of the year, because we have something that is in the works. We're not going to be able to offer it until the first of the year. And it will be widely offered, don't get me wrong, but we're going to add it as an asset or as a bonus, if you will, to the $1 level so that everyone gets it. So all that to say, the things that are listed there right now that we just talked about are not static. Just know that we are always looking for ways to enhance the goodies for supporting us at any level. So that's probably going to be the most we ever talk about Patreon, because it's brand new. We will mention it. I think it's good to mention in the show from time to time, but we will not be doing a huge spotlight on it like we just did for about 8 or 9 minutes or more. But we thought it was important to let you guys know it existed. And we're really excited. You guys kind of jumped on, and we're already seeing great results, or great participation. And it really does our hearts well seeing how your reaction and seeing your willingness to engage and support us in this way. It's very, very, it's very humbling and very heartening. So again, www.patreon.com/outlanderpod. So Summer, that's our podly announcement. Were there any other Outlander-ish announcements?
I mean, I don't know if anyone's interested, but apparently they're filming Print Shop today.
Oh, wow. If you guys have read the book, you know what that means. You know how exciting that is.
What, isn't that like chapter 25? Aren't we getting
24,
there?
24, I think.
24. 20. We're getting there. So excited. But all of the actors, and by all, I mean Sam, are having fun with the whole Print Shop being printed today, because he
printed today.
Being
filmed?
Filmed.
Whatever. We got it.
Sam posted out, hey, do you want to see Kat in the Print Shop? And then he posted a little video of like an actual cat playing with a printer. So, I mean, they're all having fun with it. And I think that, I know Meryl posted about it, Sam posted about it, and probably, was it John Gary Steele posted about it? Somebody else was posting a lot of stuff about Print Shop. So it's just all over my feed this morning. So I'm very, very excited.
That is very exciting.
And now on to our read-along. This week, we are discussing chapters 16 and 17. We'll start with 16, which is entitled, Blessedly. Willie.
Lisa T. writes, Jamie ended the last chapter feeling that Hellwater was 1,000 times more his prison. Chapter 16 begins, quote, To his extreme surprise, the next few years were in many ways among the happiest of Jamie Fraser's life, aside from the years of his marriage. Unquote. And thus begin my notes. The years Jamie spends at Hellwater after Geneva's death and Willie's birth are some of the happiest of his life. That is another subtle hint that this is retrospective, meaning in order for Jamie to know that this was some of the happiest time in his life, he must have gotten to the end of his life, or someone knows this about him and they knew him at or near the end of his life. Eileen P. writes, I keep thinking it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Life was simple-ish. He had been protected, Jamie had, from accusation or punishment for the death of the Earl of Ellesmere, and he was well-fed and clothed, and he received, now and again, word from his home in the Highlands via the careful, very careful gypsy post. He resumed his half-friendship with Lord John. The latter visited, as promised, once a quarter, and they caught up. He realized over time what Lady Dunsany had meant in her offer of releasing him. It had been Grey's influence that had kept him from being shipped off to America. This is part of the reason that our friend Candida loves John so much. Here is a beautiful passage by Diana. Quote, And he had not done it for revenge or from indecent motives, for he never gloated, made no advances, never said anything beyond the most commonplace civilities. No, he had brought Jamie here because it was the best he could do. Unable simply to release him at the time, Grey had done his best to ease his conditions of captivity by giving him air and light and horses. Unquote. Lord John is a character study of his own. He truly is a great man. Deborah C. writes, Jamie realizes that Lord John used his influence to do the best he could for Jamie to ease his captivity without asking anything in return. Their relationship began to thaw, and their friendship and mutual respect grew. Eileen P. writes, It is so nice to see Jamie and Lord John reconcile after their rift at Ardsmuir. It would have been nice if it had happened sooner, but there is that Fraser stubbornness. It took Jamie a few years to cool down enough to realize Lord John was doing him a big favor by using his influence to parole him to Hellwater. With Jamie's friendly and intellectual interaction with Lord John, regain a touch of civilization that takes him beyond Hellwater. This is similar to his time with the family at Lallybroch when he lived in the cave, and his time spent with Lord John when he was a prisoner at Ardsmuir. Now, when John visited, they sometimes played verbal chess, and every visit, John would come to the stables to spend time with Jamie, and this brought Jamie pleasure. Now, the two chess moves, Jamie says king's pawn to king four, and John replies with queen's knight to queen bishop three. Now, I did a little bit of editing here. I did not mention the moves in my original notes, but as I was adding in listener comments, Erica included, is there any particular significance to Jamie's chess move and John's in response? So I looked it up, and of course, in order to talk about it, I had to include it. So I went back and added those two lines, or added the two moves. According to a Wikipedia article on chess, Jamie's line, or Jamie's move, king's pawn to king four, is among the most popular opening moves for white to start the game. So we know that Jamie was white. Now, I couldn't find anything specific about John's move, but we do know that he likely was therefore black. So if anyone knows any chess experts or even chess players that can read anything into John's move or John's response, that would be really interesting to hear about, because I am not, I know Summer knows how to play chess and she does play chess, you know, sometimes. I think I attempted to learn one time in my teens and it just didn't work. I didn't have the attention span for it or whatever.
I mean, I don't know how to play strategically.
Like that. So you can't translate for us.
No, I can play in a reactionary manner.
Well, that's what John was. There's no reaction.
There's no strategy involved in my chess. It's more like, oh no, he's after me. Where do I go to hide my king? That's how I play chess. That, and I know exactly one move, which is called the castle, when you castle your king. That's the only chess move I know. outside of the regular, you can move knights like this and you can move pawns like that.
How they move, yeah.
Yeah. That's the only like chess move that I know is castling the king. But other than that, it's I play in a reactionary manner. There's no, I never win because I'm trying to win. I'm usually win by accident because I'm trying to hide.
But he tells us above everything else, Jamie does, there was Willie. Willie was already a rider, a horse rider, horseback rider at 3. He was strong and brave and spoiled. He gives Jamie a run for his money. He's got the wee Willie the Earl tood. Willie adored Jamie. He spent loads of time with him, but Jamie knew this could not last. Quote, there was a threat to this peaceful existence, though, which grew greater with each passing month. Ironically, the threat came from Willie himself and was one he could not help, unquote. Others were beginning to notice the similarities between the child and the groom, even though it was started in as a jest. When he hears Lady Dunsany remark on the resemblance one day, quote, he had seen this coming, but hadn't wanted to believe the resemblance was sufficiently pronounced as to be visible to anyone but himself, unquote. So Jamie noticed it too, in the set and shape of the head and shoulders, the eyes, cheekbones. It was time to speak to Lady Dunsany.
Now, a lot of the relationship that I saw between him and Willie reminded me a lot of Hamish.
Yeah, kind of.
Because, I mean, Hamish had his whole thing go down in the stables as well. And then I feel like it was almost a parallel having this whole thing go down in the stables with Willie and everything. So it just I was reminded.
That's true. And they're both sons of a laird.
Yes.
Eileen P. writes, the similarity to Claire-Brianna relationship. Jamie looks at Willie and sees the resemblance to himself. Claire looks at Brianna and sees the resemblance to Jamie. Joe B. writes, I'd like to know when Lady D, Lady Dunsany, knew this. Was it, Lady D, was it obvious to her? Did Geneva tell her, or did the resemblance become too much? The last time we heard anything of Lord Dunsany was that after retiring from Ellesmere, he took to his bed. He is not referred to again in this section of the story. Lady D is now the one in effective control. She has kept the secret of Willie's birth, offered and arranged the pardon, and provided Jamie's horse to leave. How different from the woman her husband thought he had to protect. Martina P. writes, I came to believe that Lady Dunsany knew that Jamie was Willie's father. However, the comment she made on the porch that Willie was spending so much time with Mackenzie that he started to look like him might prove the contrary. At first, I thought her daughter, Lady Isabel, uttered that comment, but this wasn't the case. But if Lady Dunsany knew of William's true paternity, why would she draw unnecessary attention to their resemblance? So this statement confused my theory about Lady Dunsany being in the know. Now, that's a good point, Martina. It makes me question that, too. What do you think, Sam?
I always thought she was not in the know.
Not in the know.
I was on that train. I don't believe that she knew. And for me, that statement kind of confirms because if you know something,
you're not going to bring attention to it. No. Yeah.
So yeah, that I felt like I was vindicated in my thoughts by that.
Let's say that Lady D didn't know. Then her work last chapter, I guess, after Ellesmere was shot and all that, her work then of trying to like protect Jamie and, you know, get him out of there, that actually can, if you think she's in the know, that's an extra reason to protect Jamie and get him gone.
Right.
But if you think she's not in the know, or if you believe she's not in the know, then the fact that Jamie protected the baby and was the one who shot him and she protected him because he saved a number of lives likely that day, that was enough for her to protect Jamie in that way. And then you could also say that, okay, once everything was done and Jamie wasn't even like involved in the court and, you know, his name was never brought up and he was, as far as everyone else was concerned, he was never there. Again, 100%, I could believe that that was done to protect the family and to protect, well, mostly to protect the family and to protect Jamie, because Jamie as a, not even a servant, but as a paroled, you know, convict, someone convicted of treason who didn't get shipped off to America, this could have been hanging or drawn and quartering, or it could have been shipped off to the colonies. So by doing that, she totally did protect him by keeping his name out of there because he did do a great service for them. So that, I think, is plenty of evidence for her protecting him, keeping his name out. But as far as her getting rid of him, I think that was
the next step to protecting him and the family. Getting rid of the one person who knew what went down. And of course, he hadn't seen his family, so it would make sense that you'd offer someone who has been in captivity for so long, who wouldn't want to go see their family. So I can absolutely agree or see where what you're saying and what I can see what Martina is saying, that I agree that that comment is like, oh, that is some dangerous, shifty stuff to be saying. You don't joke like that, you know? So I can see that.
But don't you think that the baby's life was enough?
That's what I'm trying to say. I can see that being enough.
And honestly, if she really knew, don't you think she would have pushed harder for him to go?
Earlier on, yeah. Rather than giving him the choice and say, okay, right. talk to me when you're ready.
Right.
I can see that. I mean, she still wanted him gone because he knew what had happened, and it was just safer for everybody if that, you know, was made safe and he was gone. But yeah, I think if she knew about that, probably. I can see that. So everything is arranged, and it's time for him to tell Willie. A pardon had been procured, Jamie had some money saved, and Lady Dunsany had given him a horse. So Willie's in the stables one day, and Jamie, or Mac, tells him, quote, I shall be leaving tomorrow, unquote. Willie asks where he'll be going, and can he go with him? Just like, you know, any kid. Oh, great, can I go? And then he acts up around the horses because Jamie, of course, says, no, you can't go with me. Jamie is getting after Willie and their conversation is a little bit distracted he distracts him for a bit. But ultimately, Jamie brings it back to the point. This time, Willie tells him after he says he's leaving the next day again is that you can't leave. This time, Willie says he won't let him go. Willie threatens that he'll scream and scare the horses. And of course, as we know, that's dangerous for these between 1,000 and 2,000 pound animals. You know, they can do a lot of damage. Jamie will have none of it and tells him he'll smack him if he does so. Willie kicks off and yells all the bad words he knows. And I mean, it's probably funny to read because I didn't read it the first time. I mean, when I read the books, it was the first thing I did was read it. But in preparing for this read-along, before I took notes, I listened to Davina reading it and I or performing it. And that made me laugh. Hearing Davina say words like, say those words, just like made me guffaw. So I don't know if they're going to get a little like 5 or 6. Who's 7, right? It was 7. I think it was 7 years. We'll come back to it, but I think it's about 7 years. I wonder if they're going to have this. They have to have this scene, right? Because he's saying goodbye. So this sets the whole thing up for X number of years later. But and he gives him the rosary or anything. But I guess it wouldn't be Beechwood. It might be that jet black one. But whatever he has, I don't know what he has. We don't know what they're going to allow him to keep. Anyway, I wonder if they're going to have the young actor like say all the similar words or say bad. That just made me laugh. I don't know about a young boy saying these words, but hearing Davina perform this was kind of precious.
This reminded me of that one time that you and I went to the drive-ins.
Oh, gosh. What happened?
And I think I used a bad word. And you were like, Summer, don't say blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, really? And then I just started saying every bad word that I could.
Wait, what do you mean at the drive-in? This was like last week.
No, it wasn't. No, this Summer, wasn't the drive-in years ago. This very specific one, this very specific instance happened because this was the birth of the nonsense bad word combination that I came up with, which because my spewing diatribe ended in me saying piece of bitch.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's going to be deleted. Not deleted.
I'll put a beep.
No, I'll put a beep in there.
After I said piece of bitch, we both laughed so hard that became a saying for a while.
It must have been a short while because I don't remember it.
I mean, it was like a decade ago at least.
Was it when I was in Monterey and I came up?
It's possible. We saw something at the drive-in.
And we've only the drive-in like once or twice together. Eileen P. writes, interesting how Ian and Jenny's son, young Jamie, is Laird of Lallybroch, yet I'm sure Jenny and Ian would not hesitate to discipline him. The Dunsanys do not understand the necessity of setting boundaries. This resulted in Geneva's spoiled behavior and now Willie's. It's even worse with Willie because he's an earl, so his family is ranked beneath him, and he has inherited the Fraser temper. Kaboom. Lisa T. writes, finally, the following September, a few months before Willie's 7th birthday, Jamie is about to leave Hellwater. Okay, so he's almost 7. On a side note, back to the parallels between Jamie's life and Claire's. I find it interesting that each spent the first 7 years of their child's lives with them before resuming their professional lives. Claire begins medical school when Brianna is 7, and Jamie returns to his life at Lallybroch when Willie is just shy of 7. I thought that was an interesting parallel.
Parallels.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jamie grabs him and smacks him on the bottom. Willie says he hates him, and Jamie says he's not very fond of him either and calls him a little bastard. This is a sensitive subject, or a word at least, for the boy. He declares, and I'm doing this in Davina's voice, I'm not a bastard. I'm not. Take it back. He had heard the talk then. Jamie realizes that he had delayed his going too long.
Well, I don't think the talk would have happened regardless of whether or not he stayed.
Yes, but.
So I don't think that he would have not heard those words said about him had he left.
I think we can agree, even if Jamie had taken up Lady D on her offer.
Oh, my God. Seriously. Every time.
That's the first time I've said it. I was reading it earlier.
Today.
I think I've never said it before.
I'm saying today.
I've never said it before.
You've said it like 3 times today.
In reading someone else's comments, not using it on my own.
I'm just saying it's coming out of your mouth. And every time it does, I'm thinking about D.
Oh, well, then I won't do that. I didn't know. I thought you were just laughing because it was a funny name.
No.
Oh, Lord. Summer, you're awful.
I am.
Okay. Sorry. Even if Jamie had taken up Lady Dunsany's offer to leave like right away, 6 years later or more or less, whenever, the subject of him being a bastard would still have come up because that was related to the circumstances of the birth, regardless of this groom who hung out there.
Right.
People didn't even know about Mackenzie, so he was not part of that discussion. Or he was not even part of the topic as far as they were concerned, yet. I think what Jamie meant by saying, okay, it's been long enough, or I've waited too long, is not because people were putting two and two together that he was the bastard's father. I think that if it had been enough talk for long enough that it's finally come to bug the young Earl, and the young Earl is showing sensitivity to it, he needs to get the heck out of Dodge. He should have been at the heck out of Dodge because he doesn't, even though he feels bad, he doesn't need to be around. He knew that was always a topic, but he does not need to be anywhere near the topic with the Earl reacting to it. Because if he's there, he just does not need to be around that. Because as the Earl gets older, I mean, I think it's more of a thing, more of the looks is the more dangerous, but the looks plus the talk, it's like, okay, I've got to go. He does not need to be there when people are talking about the bastard or him being a bastard potentially. Not because they think anything about Mackenzie, but because he is him. He is his, they don't know this, but he is the biological father, and thus people were already beginning to joke. And I understand that's a separate conversation, but they were already beginning to joke about how they looked alike. So that kind of put a twitch in Jamie. Maybe I should have, I need to go talk to Lady Dunsany. But then when the bastard thing came up, he's like, okay, gotta go. Too much. Gotta go. I waited too long. So he apologizes. Quote, he wanted to kneel and embrace the boy or pick him up and comfort him against his shoulder. But this was not a gesture a groom might make to an earl, even a young one. The palm of his left hand stung, and he curled his fingers tight over the only fatherly caress he was ever likely to give his son. Unquote. The poor wee boy was trying to behave earl-like, keeping his tears from falling. Have you really got to go, Mac? He asked in a very small voice. And Mac replies, I have to. Quote, he looked into the dark blue eyes, so heartbreakingly like his own, and suddenly didn't give a damn what was right or who saw. He pulled the boy roughly to him, hugging him tight against his heart, holding the boy's face close to his shoulder that Willie might not see the quick tears that fell into his thick, soft hair. Unquote. And then, Quote, Willie's arms went around his neck and clung tight. He could feel the small, sturdy body shake against him with the force of suppressed sobbing. He patted the flat little back and smoothed Willie's hair and murmured things in Gaelic that he hoped the boy would not understand. Unquote. Joe B. writes, his awareness extends to knowing rumors about his birth. To have a six-year-old react so extremely to being called a bastard in jest when his immediate family would likely never mention it shows that the talk of others has been significant and impacting on Willie, certainly enough for him to fiercely deny it. A claim of bastardy meant so much more to them, but it's a strong reaction from a child who hasn't been exposed to the wider world.
And I'm of the opinion that they've been saying it the whole time, but I think he just finally is starting to understand what the word means. He probably knows what it means now. So well, if somebody
I doubt his sister, Isabel, I doubt Lady or Lord or Lady Dunsany or Isabel would be talking to him about that, or his nannies. Jamie's conciliation to the boy allows the tension to break for both of them, and in the luxury of speaking Gaelic, the language of his heart, he can tell his son anything he wants. Willie will hear the tone, but not know the words. Lisa T. writes, I can't imagine how hard this parting must be for Jamie, but I am so glad he got to hug Willie and tell him how he felt, even if Willie couldn't understand. Jamie takes him to his room where Willie sees the small statue of the Virgin given to him by Jenny and made in France. There was a candlestick in front of it. Willie says, quote, what's that candle for? Granny says only stinking papists burn candles in front of heathen images. Jamie says, quote, well, I'm a stinking papist, unquote. Willie is fascinated. Jamie catechizes Willie as much as he can-ish, teaches him at least how and why stinking papists use candles during prayer, and he tells him he remembers many people, including friends and his wife. Willie says he wants to be a stinking papist too. He says he won't tell anybody, and Jamie wants to leave his son with something more than the wooden horse he was going to give him as a farewell present. He baptizes him William James, but those aren't his names. Jamie explains that it's his special papist name. Then he gives him his beechwood rosary too, but warns him that no one else can see it, and then sends him back to the house. Willie starts to go and then stops and says he doesn't have anything to remember him by. Jamie says, "Dinna fret yourself. I'll remember you." I know that whole hearing Davina do it. It was touching, but reading it and, you know, slowly to take notes and blah, blah, blah. Oh my gosh. There were several tears. This was a difficult chapter. I mean, it's just such a sweet and sad chapter. Anne S. writes, I love the Jamie and Willie scenes. How old is Willie when Jamie leaves? And does he remember his James name? Well, he is, as I think Lisa or someone else, excuse me, pointed out that he is almost seven when Jamie is leaving. And I'm not sure if he remembers his James name. Will that question will have to be answered in future books if we ever see Willie again?
I mean, I have an answer, but we're not talking about future books yet, so.
Exactly. Jamie is able to act as somewhat of a father to Willie, in as much as he seemingly is the only one who can or will say no to the child, and perhaps because of the difference in the way Mac the groom treats him. He is much loved by Willie, who even at three is described as having similar qualities to his father. Strong, courageous, and charming. And Joe B. continues, Catholicism was still unpopular in this period for most of Britain. The desire for having a Protestant king was strong and indeed part of the reason for the Jacobite movements, as rather than give the crown to a Catholic, the British Parliament asked the distantly in line but Protestant German Hanovers to take the crown. The Dunsanys are likely Protestant and would have taken a very dim view of having their grandson admit to being a stinking papist. Jamie, in baptizing Willie, is able to give him as much of himself as he can, his true name and the long-kept rosary. Lisa T. writes, Jamie's answer is also a way for him to tell Willie about their family, even though Willie will never know it. I think that is when Jamie tells Willie that he remembers Claire always, that Willie wants to be a papist, so that Jamie will remember him too. Jamie sacrifices his own happiness for the sake of his child's welfare, just as he did for Brianna when he sent Claire back through the stones, knowing he will never see his child again.
And that was chapter 16, and now we will be moving forward to chapter 17, entitled Monsters Rising. And with that, people, we are back in 1968.
Chapter 17 opens in Loch Ness, Scotland, August 1968. Back to the future we go. We are back with Bree, Roger, and Claire. I'd almost forgotten that they were in this book. The three at Loch Ness. They had found what they were looking for in the records of Ardsmuir. They are wondering why Jamie wasn't sent to the colonies, like most of the other prisoners. But he had found his parole at a place called Hellwater. Claire remarks that he's lucky he wasn't sent, since he got terribly seasick. Right. Brianna has decidedly not inherited this trait from her father. Eileen P. writes, it's interesting how the sun shines with, quote, unaccustomed ferocity, unquote, as Claire, Brianna, and Roger get closer to finding Jamie. Lisa T. writes, it is a beautiful day in the Loch, but as we have seen many times before, the sun is also a symbol for Jamie. The fact that it is shining with unaccustomed ferocity is symbolic of their getting closer to finding Jamie. Quote, her mother stretched luxuriously, enjoying the light wind. To say nothing of what fresh air is like, I feel like a toadstool that has been growing in the dark for weeks, all pale and squashy, unquote. This reminds me of Jamie's blade of grass speech in Outlander and Claire's, I would die, I thought, like a grub dug up from the soil and tossed onto a rock to shrivel, naked and defenseless in the sun, unquote, from Dragonfly and Amber. But this is different. The sun and air are not harmful, but nurturing. They drive to Drumna Drochet to rent a boat. Roger had taken further leave from his college, and they had been to the Lake District, London, where they had seen the royal warrant of pardon for James Alexander Mackenzie Fraser. Of course, they were all thinking, this was 1764. If Jamie had survived even a few more years, and if she went back, meaning Claire, would she find him? Deborah C. writes, Claire and Roger both consider what this might mean. Being close to finding Jamie, 202 years in the past, so 1766, which could mean Claire could go through the stones and find him. It is unclear that Bree has thought of this possibility. So they go to take a boat to go on the loch. So they find the boat. They have a conversation about short men versus tall men. And Claire shares her observation that tall men were sweet and gentle, usually, that they didn't need to prove anything. Whereas a short man knows he can't do anything unless you let him. So he's always trying something on just to prove he can. Eileen P. writes, I'm trying to figure out who the short men are in the first three books. I keep coming up with Master Raymond, which disproves Claire's theory about short men. I never pictured Master Raymond turning mean if he didn't get his way. While she cites short orchestra conductors as vicious, I would think there would be someone closer to demonstrate her theory. I just think something must have happened to Claire with the short man to make her offer material advice to Bree to not get involved with one. Perhaps she was just looking for a way to talk about tall Jamie Fraser in comparison.
Well, to be honest, most of the men of the time period were shorter than Claire. And they all tried to rape her. So maybe there's something to that.
They take the boat out on the loch. Brianna falls asleep. Roger asks if the same holds true for tall versus short women. She says no, it's more of whether or not they see men as the enemy or as men and like them for it. Claire says it has nothing to do with women's lib. She says she saw the same thing in the 18th century, and of course she's thinking of Jamie. She shivers at the thought of going through the stones again. She says it's indescribable. Roger mentions he'd heard the stones, and that Bree had as well. She tells Roger, quote, it's there, you know, unquote. Meaning chapter 19 in Outlander, wherein she meets Nessie. They discuss the stone circles. They don't know what they were created for, but they were built to mark something. Now, she links this type of thing to the monster she saw. If there were a passage under the lock, it would explain the presence of that monster. Eileen P. writes, Claire's theory regarding Nessie makes sense. It reminds me of Land of the Lost, where a family falls through a time portal back to prehistoric times. In the Outlander series, it would be in reverse. The dinosaurs fall through a portal to the present. Claire points out that the dinosaurs can go back to their time period like she did through Cranodon. Claire points out another trait Bree has from Jamie, the ability to sleep almost on command, almost anywhere. This when Bree is woken up by water sprayed on her when Roger catches a crab, and then she settles right back down into sleep. More stone talk. It gets harder and harder to go through each time. The first time was the worst thing that had happened to her, Claire says. The second time was 1,000 times worse. Quote, I don't know whether it was because I didn't come back on the right day. It was Beltane when I went and 2 weeks before when I came back. Galus went on Beltane too, she says. She refers to her to Galus's notebook. The door is open on the sun feasts and fire feasts. May only partly open as you near those times. Claire gets serious. She asks Roger, quote, would you go down there, Roger, jump overboard, dive in, go on down through that dark until your lungs were bursting, not knowing whether there are things with teeth and great heavy bodies waiting? Would you go if Brianna were down there? Unquote. He looks at Brianna and then back at Claire and says, quote, yes, I think I would. And of course, Claire responds, so would I. Eileen P. writes, I think Claire's questioning of whether Roger would go through the stones if Brianna were on the other side is Claire testing Roger's love and devotion for Brianna. She needs to know how deeply Roger feels about Brianna so she knows Roger will be there for Brianna when Claire goes through the stones. Joe B. writes, having found Jamie in prison records and his parole, focus now turns to process. Claire and Roger discuss the stones while Bree sleeps, a continuation of the relationship they are developing outside of Bree. Where Bree has said you can go back, Roger now asks, will you go back? In balancing the fear and terror of the stones against the weight of finding Jamie, Claire faces one of the many realities of returning to the past. The mysterious Loch Ness is a physical representation of their search, the questions of the monster echoing the questions about the possibilities before Claire and Bree and Roger, and are prepared to risk the darkness of both the water and the in-between of the passage through the stone for those they love. I think in this conversation, Claire is asking or confirming how much Roger will protect, care for, and love Bree if and when she, Claire, goes back, and confirming in herself that she will risk the darkness for the possibility of her son. I think this is where the decision to go, if they can find proof enough, is actually made. And you just gave me a tear prick, Joby. Martina P. writes, I have been thinking quite a bit about the title of this chapter. Diana chose the plural for monster, so she cannot only refer to the Loch Ness monster. I wonder if the stones could also represent a monster in this chapter. The calling of the stones with their enormous pull and Claire's impending decision whether to take the risk and not knowing what is awaiting her on the other side. On the one hand, she desires nothing more than to be with Jamie, but the awareness of the danger and having to leave Brianna is also present. Brianna's physical presence is just as dominant as Jamie's. People are immediately drawn to them and want to be in their company. Seems so effortless for both of them. We discover in this chapter that Brianna has not inherited Jamie's seasickness. Brianna seems a little sidelined in this chapter. All conversations take place between Roger and Claire. There is a certain intimacy between them, and Roger seems to have a silent admiration for Claire. Not in a romantic way, but he is without doubt fascinated. And I will refer to what I have said before, and what comes up again and again without giving any spoilers. No, it's not romantical like he wants to get with her. He wants to get with Bree. However, he is enamored. He's intrigued, enamored, and I'm sorry, attracted to Claire. That's all I have to say. What do you think, Sam?
Well, but see, when you say the word attracted,
I know people go there.
It goes wonky. Because I think he's definitely fascinated by her, and he can acknowledge that she is a well-preserved woman and that she's not bad-looking. But I think that being able to acknowledge those facts doesn't necessarily mean you're quote-unquote attracted to somebody.
You mean sexually attracted. And right. I didn't. And I know totally what you're saying, because that is what our default understanding of attraction is. But attraction is not just sexual attraction. There's different kinds of because there's a chemistry. There is a chemistry between them. And again, chemistry. There's a chemistry between Claire and Master Raymond. They weren't sexually attracted to each other. I mean, I don't know about him.
He might have been.
I mean, he might have been, but it wasn't ever expressed to us. But that there was a chemistry there and an attraction there. And that happened to be because of certain things that we can't say yet. But anyway, I absolutely don't jump to the sexual conclusion. That's not what I mean. But he is, I do think he's attracted to her. And I think he is probably sexually attracted to her in some way. Not that he wants to jump her bones like he wants Brianna. But you can be sexually attracted, or maybe the better way to put it is, as you said, you recognize that someone is attractive.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Or well-preserved, however you want to put it. But his thing, this Roger, some of my, you know, it's so, I would be interested if someone went through and documented the Roger and Claire scenes, because they do happen. One of my favorite ones, and I'm not going to say what it is, I guess by even saying that it's there means that, well, whatever, is in book six. And one of my favorite ones of the two of them is in book six. And I'm sorry, straight up, you can tell he finds her attractive. So that's all I can say. But fascinating. So now we finished a part as well. So we'll not only finish two chapters, we have a new part coming on. What is that?
So that, with this chapter, ends part four. And we are moving on to part five, which is entitled, You Can't Go Home Again. So join us next time when we'll be discussing chapters 18, entitled Roots, and chapter 19, entitled To Lay a Ghost. It kind of sounds sexual.
Just a little bit.
A little bit.
So we'll take our leave with Summer and me and Lady D.
Oh, and Lady D.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20. Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.